Welcome to You Can Tweet That, fun game we're going to be playing along the way. I am the last talk between you and the tech ed party, so, you know, bear with me. So we're going to be running through application virtualization. We're going to do everything that was done earlier today in the intro session, all using PowerShell. And if you guys weren't able to attend the introduction at V5.0 session, don't worry. We're going to try and introduce that for you as well. Hi there, also. My name is George Matthews, and I'm a software developer engineer and test in the application virtualization team, and I work on performance mostly, and also some bits of the client streaming user experience that you get when you work with our lovely client. And before we get started today, raise your hand in this room if you need a little bit more exercise, because you guys have been sitting here, like I've been sitting around for 4 days straight. Raise your hand. Okay, good. So if we all like lump together, we all feel like one big happy family. So if you guys are sitting in the back or like you're far away and you feel like it, stand up. You're making my talk very hard. Well, if at any point you guys do feel like standing up, because you might want to, because PowerShell gets a little hard to read when you're all always sitting there in the back, unless you're now. So let's go over the schedule for today. We're going to talk about each part of the AppV client, and we're going to go through all of this in 7 demos. So I have 7 great demos to show you guys, and we're going to automate every single part of our product using PowerShell. And the last part is we're going to start putting this all together, and we're going to start doing some really cool demos that you guys are going to love, where we're going to stitch all these like new concepts that we just learned about PowerShell and about AppV. We're going to stitch them together, and we're going to do some cool stuff. So first off, who here has used PowerShell? Who here uses PowerShell as their only command shell? Okay, like one of you, and the rest of you. So your turnoff was, why not? Just starting to learn. Anyone else? The biggest thing that most people get from PowerShell is that they see it and it gets a little bit intimidating. But I'm here to tell you today, it's not. There's always built-in help, and you're always able to get access to all the information you need to do to work with your commands. And we're going to show that today as well in the demos. Some other reasons to go with it, it's object-oriented. If you use things like Python or Perl, you're probably used to getting some commands, and you get some string output, and then you have to go back and look through it with a regex to find all your information. You don't need to do it with PowerShell. In PowerShell, everything comes back as an object, and most of those objects are .NET objects. So if you guys have been working with MSDN or you guys work with C#, you guys are used to this. You've seen everything that's up there. And the last part, it's getting even better with Windows 8. Windows 8 introduces over 2,000 new commandlets into PowerShell and tons of awesome new features. You can almost entirely manage an entire system without ever touching the UI. You can do all of this in PowerShell, and it's super easy to figure out which commandlets you need to use thanks to the built-in help system. So why about AppV? What about us? Well, we build on this new foundation in PowerShell 3, and we automated the entire product. If you guys, raise your hand if you attended the intro session earlier, a couple of you. You saw Andy and Matthias work through and do all the UI, and they work through, and I love you guys, but I'm going to do everything you did. I'm just going to do it faster because I'm going to use PowerShell for all of my commands. Sorry. And if again, at any time, if you ever get lost, you can always run help. The whole thing. All of the commands and all the really big ticket items that we're going to do today are all under 140 characters. And to prove this, Mr. Andy is running our AppV PowerShell account. So if you guys got mobile phones, you got laptops, pull them out. You can follow along and you can see all of our commands, or at least the really big ticket ones, up on our AppV PowerShell account. Go take a look and we'll be live tweeting as we go along. So to get started, let's go back and let's kind of review the product. If you guys are new to AppV, if not, okay. If AppV comes with 3 core components. And these are all packaged together when you buy AppV. We give you all 3. We don't make you mix and match. So you get part 1, the sequencer. The sequencer takes your MSI installers or your old XE installers or your old batch files or whatever it is that you use to deploy a package onto a client. And we turn those into .appv files. And .appv files are self-contained. They have all the registry, file, other information, extension points, everything that you would need to run the application on our client. Part 2 is our server. Our server is kind of an optional component, but it makes it super easy for you to manage all your applications across your entire environment. You put these .app files, you import them into the server, and the server manages them and holds on to them. So if you ever decide that, hey, I got Adobe Reader 9, and it's Tuesday, so Adobe Reader issued an update, and they issued one yesterday, too, and the day before, and the day before, and I want to manage all those upgrades, I can just keep importing that upgraded package into the server, and the server will manage it and figure out that, hey, you know, this client over here needs an update, and this one doesn't, so I won't update that one. It just watches all of these and keeps these all along. And then last, we have the client. And the client is where we execute these .app files. And this turns those files into what looks like, to Windows, native applications. So the whole thing that we've been focusing on in 5.0 is to make these apps look, act, and feel like native. And when you actually see these demos, you're going to see that when we load up the apps, they look, perform, and they feel just like they're native. There's no hypervisor. That's one of the common questions I've been getting, you know, as we've been working in the booth. There's no hypervisor. We're just virtualizing operating system resources and nothing else. So for those of you sort of new to PowerShell, those of you who haven't seen it, PowerShell follows very simple command syntax. Everything goes in the pattern of verb noun. Parts of speech, y'all learned them in elementary school, or at least I did. And so let's start out by just going over some of the commands that we're going to work with on the sequencer, which is where we're going to start. We're going to start all our packages on the sequencer. And so we have legacy AppView packages. Now, these are for if you guys have used AppView 4.6, a couple of you. These are where you can take your old 4.6 and 4.5 packages you don't need to worry about. You just convert them right up to 5.0. Next, we have new sequencer packages, where we can take new MSI installers and new executables, and we can bring those into AppV. And then last, we have package accelerators, which is another feature we added in 4.6 SP1. And these make it incredibly fast for you to sequence applications. And they're up on TechNet. You basically just grab the package accelerator and your installer, and it just walks you through the sequencing process in, I think, like three clicks. I think three. Don't quote me on that number. So let's take a look at our sequencer. I have locked my machine. Okay. So let me start our demo. So I'm going to start out by moving into a directory that has a bunch of sequencings that I've had from 4.6. And for the record, if at any point you guys get confused by a PowerShell command I'm about to run, raise your hand, signal, and I'll slow down a little bit and keep working through this. Oh, you're already... I have tried, which was big part of the reason I said, if you all want to move a little bit closer, it might be easier. During the tech demo, we tried to get up there. So hopefully y'all can bear with me. So I'm going to move into my package, and I'm going to run get child item. And this is just the equivalent of dir, or a directory command. So I'm going to run that, and look what pops out. So I have four packages. I have Adobe Reader, Notepad++, Paint.net, and WinZip. And these are all old 4.6 packages, all imported from my old installation. And I want to convert these. So how do I get started? I run help. And one of the new features of PowerShell 3 is the ability to go and look on Windows Update for updated help documents. So as it goes on, you know, we can get more information about these commandlets as we decide to update them. And so you can see up here, I have six commandlets that have been shown up. I'm going to start with the first one. Now, if I decided I could run convert from legacy AppView package and just run that for each one of those commands in there. But that would mean I would have to type that four times. And this is PowerShell. And in PowerShell, you can almost do everything with a one-liner. So let's figure out how we can make this into a one-liner to convert all these packages. So first, in order to keep ourselves under that 140-character limit, I'm going to set up a variable. And variables in PowerShell are always notated with a dollar sign in front. You can just say $, new package directory, and we're just going to give it a string. And the string is the directory that we want to put our packages into when we're done. So we're going to put them into this 5.0 converter packages directory. So now, I'm going to write dir command. And dir is actually just an alias for get child item that we ran earlier. It's actually the same thing. PowerShell treats them exactly the same. And then I'm going to use another PowerShell construct. I'm going to pipe. And piping takes the output of the first command and passes it directly into the second. And in this case, I'm going to run for each object. And because directory is going to return me an array of directories, I want to run something on each one of those. So I'm going to run convert at v legacy package, and I'm going to use another PowerShell construct in my command. I'm going to run $_, which is to say pipe output. So that's from the last command. $_ always brings you the output of the last command. And I'm going to run .fullname, which will give me the full directory path to that object. And we're going to put those into our new package directory, which is the second parameter. So we're going to start that off. And if we play Jeopardy music in here, we can sit there and whistle while we wait. So what this is doing is this is going through and looking at our 4.6 packages. It's going through all the SFTs, all the OSDs, any other configurations that's inside those, and it's bringing that forward into our new at v5.0 environment. So if any, actually, like, just one more count. How many of you are 4.6 customers? A couple of you. So this is going to be like the one of the one-liners that we actually are putting up on our Twitter account right now. One of the most powerful ones, I think, and actually, no, it is. It's up there. Perfect. Well, at v PowerShell, all one word. So you can see we've gotten our first set of packages. They're all coming through. Adobe Reader was a little bit big, so it took a little bit longer to complete. We're going through. We're doing paint.net. And wins it.
Sorry, dude. There's a plus in between
the app. Oh, it's a plus. No, no. I mean, well, no, there's a plus on the display name. It's only on display, I hope. So as you can see right here, I get all my errors and all my information piped back to me in the command shell. And I got one error. This WinZip package was actually sequenced originally for Windows 2000. And because we don't support that, PowerShell has alerted me and told me that I can't use this package in 5.0. So I'll need to go back and resequence this. So now we're complete. We've gotten our packages. And now we're ready to move on. Let's make a new package. So here, go away. There it goes. So here, I'm going to use the new at v sequencer package command. And this is a one-liner that is going to take an MSI installer, and we're going to turn it into a 5.0 package. How many of you have seen the at v sequencer 5.0 UI? A couple of you? Those of you who haven't? It looks exactly like this. And normally you click, and you hit next, and it has a wizard, and it walks you through each step. But we're going to do all of those commands just with our single line of PowerShell. So first, we're going to use parameters. And parameters are always specified with a dash in PowerShell. And you can always tab complete and figure out which ones you need to do just by hitting tab. Or if you don't miss a required parameter, you can just run the new at v sequencer command, new at v sequencer package command, and it will just tell you all the ones that are required. So there's four parameters that we require. First one is our installer. And I have an installer for 7-zip. I want to sequence 7-zip. Next is the primary virtual application directory. And this one is the directory that we're going to install to. So you know how most installers pop up and they say, hey, where do you want to install to? This is that directory. It can be any directory you want. I just pointed it to the default package so that I can do click and it looks really fast when I'm doing it up in the demo. Yes, sir. You do have to specify something. And if you miss it, PowerShell will ask you to say, hey, I need this. So the next thing, the name of the package. Packages need a name. And the last part, where are we going to put that thing when we're done? Sure. That is exactly what that means. There is no more Q drive in at v5.0. That also got applause in the intro session, and I feel cheap for stealing that again. So anyway, our installer has popped up for 7-zip. And because it's a demo, I'm just going to hit install. I'm done. So now the sequencer is going to go, and the sequencer is going to look at all of those packages and all of those files and register keys and whatever else our installer did. And it's going to look at that. It's going to make us an APV5.0 package. But I kind of like the Out and Brown approach to doing this. So I have one that I've done earlier, or I have a Pi that I've created. Not really a Pi. It's more like a package. And just to speed things along, I'm just going to show that to you. So you can see that we have 7-zip sequenced and ready to go. Make sense? Awesome. So let's take this package, put this up on our content share that we're going to use in a little bit for our next set. We're just going to copy that right up in here. Perfect. And you can also see that I've sequenced some other packages earlier that we're going to continue to use in our next set of demos. So you can see we have 4 packages that we've sequenced. One of them you guys were here for. And we also have our converter packages. These are all the ones that were made for us earlier. And you guys see the extra files in here, the deployment configuration and user configuration, the MSI installer. We're going to get to those in a minute, so don't worry. So let's go back over to our little summary. So just to summarize, we've taken our packages, we've taken our installer, and we've sequenced these using the APV5.0 packages. So now we have a bunch of packages ready to go. So now we're going to move these on, and we're going to go to the next piece in our demo. We're going to use these on the server. We're going to set these packages up there so we can deploy them and use them out there. So we have three commands you can use on the server, or 3 main nouns. We have APV server package, which you can see is very similar to APV sequencer package, just that it's on the server, like its name implies. And we have a couple of verbs you can use with that. We also have server connection groups. And for those of you who missed the intro session this morning, connection groups are ways to dynamically move a set of packages so they get virtualized together in the client. So you can think of things like Java or middleware or even application to application. And we're going to use an example of this in the demos. So if you guys have been using 4.6, this is the new version of dynamic suite composition, except that it's much, 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 much easier, and you don't need to go around manually tinkering with .osd files. And last, we have publishing servers. Now, why would we have publishing servers as a command on a publishing server? Well, in APV5.0, we've changed our server architecture, and we now use a hub-and-spoke architecture for our entire server. So we have a management service, which is connected to the database. This is where all the packages live. And then coming out from the management server, you can imagine all these little spokes of publishing servers. So this way, if you have a lot of customers or a lot of clients or a lot of things that are going to hit a single server, you don't need to worry about maintaining 8 different servers and figuring out, oh, I need to import this over here and here and here. You just import it once, and if you need to scale out, add a publishing server. Really simple. So let's go try some of this on our server. I'll switch back over. Wait for this thing to move out of the way. So we're going to start, and we're going to do another built-in PowerShell feature. This is a new feature that was introduced in PowerShell 2.0, and it's called jobs. And jobs are really easy ways to run commands and have these execute in the background while you're doing something else. So in this case, rather than sitting here and waiting for a bunch of copies to complete, we're just going to run 2 background jobs. One, to copy out that 5.0 packages directory we just saw into a local directory on this server called cpackages. And the other one, I am the world's best typist, by the way. You can see that I'm actually typing without typing. Isn't that cool? No? Okay. I'm going to go home and cry. So I'm now going to copy all of these packages over to my server. I think I'm still waiting. There it goes. And if at any point you want to see all the background jobs for PowerShell that are running on a system, again, you see this same verb? These verbs are popping up, and now you can see they're repeating. We're going to run get job. So instead of start job, We're going to run git job. And git job will return us this list of PowerShell jobs that are running in the background. And actually, you can see in this case, they've been completed. And I get this nice little formatted table here for me to look at. It does return a job object. And if actually you wanted to play with the output of a command that was running inside that job, there's another verb, receive, and you can run receive job and specify the job ID, and you'll get the object that came out of that. Any more questions about jobs? Awesome. Let's move on. So again, we're going to start every set of PowerShell commands we do with running help, because I always forget, and I work on the product, and I forget what commands we can do. So I'm going to run git help. And you can see, returns that entire list that I just showed you up on the PowerPoint. Same thing. So now I'm going to go into the C packages directory. And the C packages directory, as you can see in a few seconds, is already populated with all of those packages that we just copied over. So I want to just look at the ones that are just at V's. So I'm going to run ls start.atv. ls, by the way, for all the Unix admins in the audience, a couple of you, ls is just another alias to get child item. We alias that. That's actually included in PowerShell by default. I loved it when I first saw this. I got very excited. So we're just going to ls star.atv, and look, all of our packages, all of our wildcards just work just like we think they should. So who has set up HTTP streaming on an ATV4.6 server? Who has enjoyed their time setting up an HTTP system on an ATV4.6 server? Okay, that's not a whole lot of you. We're going to set up HTTP streaming for all of our packages. We're going to set them up so we can stream them and import them into our server, and they're going to stream out over HTTP. I'm going to show you how easy this is. And just to prove what I'm doing, C packages on this server is actually a virtual application directory. So when I go to view virtual directories, you can see that if I go to HTTP whack whack at v content slash packages, I'm just going to get content that's in that C packages directory. So I've set that up. So now I'm going to set up a string. The base of all our packages is going to be HTTP at v content slash packages. All makes sense. So we're going to continue on. And now we're just going to put that server root together along with the name of our package, using that pipe command, just like we did before. Same thing. You can start to see a lot of my demos are starting to get repetitive. And, anyone else see that? That didn't work out too well. I think I need some piece of code that will stitch two parts of a path together. Anyone know if there's a function call? Join path, okay. Any others? Anyone else? You get a Starbucks card, by the way, for answering a question. I'll come down in a second. I actually am cheating because I already knew the answer. But I'm going to show you that it's so easy to bring in your C# and .NET binaries, and you can bring those right in the PowerShell and call them directly inside PowerShell. So I'm not actually, don't worry, my demo actually didn't actually die. We're just going to take these paths and we're going to combine them. And I found a thing on MSDN. You guys can go look it up, and you can see this, system.io.path.combine. And this takes two pieces of a path and combines them together. And you can see I can bring that right in line in PowerShell, just by surrounding the namespace in brackets and using the scope resolution operator, two colons, to get to the method. And there I'm just going to pass in server root, which is that HTTP at v content thing we just made, and a pipe that has the name of the package that we just saw. And because it's HTTP, I can't use spaces in my HTTP path, so I'm going to replace those with %20. So if I run this command and write that out, you can see what that gave me. That's much better. We can actually use that. Let's go on. So now I'm just going to import these into the server, and I'm just going to replace the write host with import at v server package. And just to prove, by the way, that I'm not screwing with you, here's my server, no packages. And all of our packages are imported, so I'm just going to go ahead and refresh and take a look at our management server, and look, they're all there. Thank you. That made me feel good. So, we have our packages up here. We need to entitle them. Now we need to give them access to our user groups that we have pre-configured in Active Directory. So I have two user groups that I'm going to grant. Don't ask me why I picked these names. I don't remember. I think I was watching a show like Bugs Bunny, I guess. So just to get a list so we can go back and look at all the packages we have on the server, we're going to run, again, a similar verb just with that vServer package. We're going to run get at vServer package. And look at that. There's our packages. So now we're going to take the output of that directory, or that, I'm sorry, not that directory, that command. We're going to pipe that into our next command. All makes sense. This is all becoming very similar to all of you. And then I'm going to pipe this into grant at vServer package. And grant at vServer package gives entitlement to all these groups that we just set up. And you remember, I put the entitlement groups inside a variable, so it's all right there for us. So I'm going to hit go. And look, if you see the entitlements field, right where my mouse is, you can see it's already been populated with the SID, the security identifier that's associated with that group. So now, we have to do one more step. We have to turn these packages on so they actually get published out to our users. So we're going to publish them. And if you can see right here, think of publishing just as the equivalent of turning a package on in a server. If a package isn't being published, it means that if someone goes and uses their client to look at our server, they won't get anything. So we're going to publish it. And we just want to publish one package. So again, I'm going to use a wildcard to just publish my XML notepad package. I'm going to run get at the server package, and I'm going to use wildcard for XML. And I got one package. I got my XML notepad. So I'm going to pipe that into, you guys guessed it, publish at the server package. All very straightforward, right? All makes a lot of sense. So I'm just going to hit publish. And just to prove to you that I just published one, and take a look. You can see XML Notepad lit up and now green. That's actually live on our server. But you know what? I want to publish all those packages. I want to get them all. Why not? So let's just run get IP server package, no extra expressions, and that's going to give us back that big list we saw before and pipe them into a publish, and boom. Look at this. That was a delayed boom. They're all published. They're up and running on our server. Perfect. So, next feature. Next feature we're going to do is connection groups. And we're going to take one of our connection groups, and we're going to make one using our two packages that we have for Office and for Visio. And we're going to join those packages together. Those of you who have used AppV in the past, you remember that this involved a lot of complex processes. We're going to do this all in one line of PowerShell. So first, we need to get a variable that's going to hold all the packages that we want to put into a connection group. So I'm going to make a variable called office packages, and I'm going to set it to be the output of our get at vServer command, or get at vServer package command, and I'm going to run this with Microsoft in the title, which should give me, look at that. There's our applications. So you can see that's right there. So now we're going to make a new at vServer connection group, and we're going to call it Office Connection Group. I couldn't think of a more original and better title, so bear with me on that one. And I'm going to change its properties. Now, this is a little bit of a different verb than we've used in the past. This is set. And set needs to take in the object that we're going to play with and also the property that we're going to adjust. So in this case, we're going to change an AppV server connection group, and we're going to use that one we just made, Office Connection Group. You can see that variable that we just had right there. And then we're going to move over, and we're going to look at the next parameter, which is appvServer package. And we're going to set it to be the office packages variable that we made earlier that has both of our packages in it. All make sense? Raise your hand if it doesn't make sense. Yay. Everyone's following along. So we have our single connection group with both of our packages up and running. So now we're going to do something the same thing. We're going to do something very similar to what we just did. We're going to grant and give it the same entitlement rights that we gave to the packages we had before. And I kept that same environment variable in the past, entitlement groups. I'm just going to use that. And now my package is all set up and entitled. And the last thing we have to do, just turn it on. We're going to publish it. Let's go take a look back on our server. And we can see all our packages are now being published. They have the SIDs that we identified. And if we go over to connection groups, we can see those both set up right here. One question. I don't either, but that's a very good question. I'll redirect you to Andy and Matthias at the end of the session for that. I'm actually not quite sure of the answer. So I'm just going to move over and just make sure that we're all set up for our next set of demos. We're going to go back and... So, to review... I like coming down here when I have slides. So to review, we've taken a set of packages, we now have them published up on our server, and we just made a connection group. And we've entitled them out to our users, and then we have our server all set up, up and running, a couple lines of PowerShell, and we're ready to go. Next step is we're gonna start working with our client. And our client has the most extensive set of commands and of any component in our system. We can work with client packages and connection groups, as you might imagine. And instead of server, you can note that we just have client in the name instead of server or sequencer. You can also add and remove publishing servers. And also virtual processes. And virtual processes are apps that are up and running on the client that you want to adjust or you want to look at. You can also change the configurations. And also applications that are inside client packages. So if you guys saw earlier, my Office package has lots of applications. It has Word, Excel, Outlook, PowerPoint. And GetApp client application is going to help you look and inspect each of those packages to find out the applications that are inside. So let's start with something basic. Go to our client. And again, every time we're starting out, we're just going to run help. And we can see this big, extensive list of all those commands that are available to us on our client. So now, we're going to add a client package. And just for record, for the first set of demos we're going to do on the client, we're not going to connect to the server and use the server publishing just yet. I want to show you guys some cool features that you can do with publishing. So we're going to put down XML Notepad. So our XML Notepad package is now deployed. You can see it's right there. And I just did that just in a similar manner that we did our server packages. I did add, I gave add the path to the app v file, and I hit publish. And we're done. And if I want to get rid of it and make it go away, I can just run unpublish and pipe that command to remove. And look, it's gone. It's disappeared. So, one of the features we talked about in the introductory session today was dynamic deployment configuration. And one of the things you may want to do with a package is you may want to change the way it's deployed to a user by changing things like shortcuts, file type associations that it's registered for, extension points. Any one of those can be adjusted using a dynamic configuration document. And these documents are deployed. You saw those documents being created when we did our sequencing. You saw those documents get set up in the output path of our sequencer. So we're just going to adjust one for XML Notepad. And you can see here, I've taken the file, the shortcut that we put on the desktop, and I'm just going to move it to another folder called at the shortcuts. Make sense? Pretty straightforward. So let's see what happens when we do that. So I'm going to add the client package, just like I did before, except this time I'm going to specify, pretty straightforward, dynamic deployment configuration. And give it a path to that file. And I'm going to pipe the output of that command to publish. And look at that. We have a folder. Well, that's not exciting. So let's get rid of that. So we're going to unpublish it and take it away. Oh, hold on 1 second. You're going to love this next part. So the question was, can't you just remove it all together? And the answer is absolutely yes, why not? So here, I have just removed the entire shortcut area. And this is a user configuration document. So this is one for just the user. Now I'm going to go back and now I'm going to publish that document, that package again. And this time I'm going to say dynamic user configuration path. I'm going to give it that little XML I just showed you that had that entire section removed. And look, there you go, just as you asked. It is gone. It's almost as if you've anticipated my demo. It's gone from the desktop. You can see it's still published here in the start menu. And let's just get rid of all those altogether. So we've now taken and we've just experimented with publishing a couple packages onto our client without using a server. Let's change this up a little bit and let's see how this would look if we actually connected to our publishing server. So I'm going to move over to my second demo, or fifth demo. Restore that back. Oh my. There we go. Much better. And you guys have all figured out at this point, I start every demo that I've been doing with getting help. And we're just going to do it again just so we can see all the commands that are available to us. If there's one thing you take back from this session, it's help. If you ever get lost. So first, we're going to add a publishing server. So I'm giving it a name. I just picked a fun name to get this publishing server on our client. It doesn't really matter. It could be anything you want. And the path to our content server. And this is the content server that we were looking at and we were using earlier, so it's going to have all those packages up on it. So you can see I have that package and, or I'm sorry, that server. It's up and now configured on our client. But you can see in here that the user refresh interval is 0 and the user refresh interval unit is day, which means it will never refresh on any day except on logon. But I want to change this to refresh on logon and every hour. So I'm going to run set at the publishing server. This is very similar to the set at the server package connection group that we just did a little bit ago. This time I'm going to pass in the server ID, which you can see is 1. I'm going to change the interval unit to hours. I'm going to change the interval itself to 1. So this should refresh every hour. Well, if anyone wants to sit here for the next hour and wait for it to refresh, you're all welcome to do so. But I think we can do a little bit better. Let's just initiate a refresh on our own. And we're going to use one of those same constructs that we mentioned a little bit earlier. We're going to use a background job for this. So this is a background job to connect to your server and publish all the packages that we find on it in the background. And you can see that now our publishing refresh is actually ongoing. So if we go back and look on our desktop, boom, Dobe Reader's out there and now being published. And the rest of our packages are going to follow very quickly. So I need to run these next few commands in a little bit of time so I don't miss anything. So I'm running get at the, wow, that is way too much output for you guys. Did you guys read that? I read that. I'm giving the demo, so of course I read that. That's a little harder to read. So we're going to use another PowerShell built-in command called format table. And actually, if you do help format, you're going to see a whole bunch of other ways you can format data. But format table is really nice for this since it prints it out in a nice, concise view, and that's... Look at that, that's a lot easier to read. And look, all of the 7 packages that we were working with earlier have now been published down and are ready to use on our client. And just to double check, you can see our connection groups. All make sense? I hope so. So, let's go back. Let's use some of these. Let's just open up paint.net. And you can see that right the first time we load it, we're going to get a progress bar. It helps us know that this is the first time we launched on that package. Give us 1 second when we get that up and running for you. And we'll have that running up in just a moment. But also, on the same system, I'm going to start up our Adobe Reader application. Oh my. And my network might have failed in that middle of that, so pay no attention to that last dialogue. So, we have Adobe Reader up and running. And I'm going to start customizing and playing with Adobe Reader. And I'm going to go and I'm going to load up a document. I've been looking at a new car. It's beautiful, isn't it? So I'm going to go through and I'm going to see this document. And now, you notice that when I open up Adobe Reader, this is now my recent documents list. I'm going to go ahead and close that and just open it back up again. Go back and you can see it's still in there. Now, you can imagine that many of your users have applications that When you deploy them in the right way that they're supposed to work. And then 2 weeks later, you get a call saying, I hit some button and my package doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work. I don't know why. Some setting got messed up somewhere. And you go down, you want to uninstall it, but you know if you uninstall the package, the files that had the configuration might get left over. Well, with ATV, you don't need to worry about that. And you can reset any package back to its original state just from day one, just by using a simple PowerShell command. So this might be the best one for you guys to take back. This is repair. And in this case, we're going to get ATV client package, and we're going to repair our Adobe package. Dun, dun, dun. Yes. For starting an applause round, you're also going to get a new policy. So we're in doesn't work twice. You can't applaud for the same thing. So that is working with our client. Now you're all just abusing it. Don't make me come down there. So they will lose their preference settings, yes. So don't run that if they like the way that their package is set up. That's kind of like a last resort. I don't know what's wrong. Just put it back in day one. So for those of you who have been using 4.6 for any length of time, you guys have no doubt come encounter with SFT MIME. And for those of you who are new to ATV, pay no attention to this slide. You can sleep for the next 5 or 6 seconds. I promise I won't say anything too exciting. But if you've been using SFT MIME, these are the translations from old SFT MIME commands into their new PowerShell equivalents. And this is all up in the slide, so if you guys go on My Tech Ed, you can download this and keep this and print this out in your cube. I'll even autograph it.
The repair command you run, you can do this remotely?
Stop anticipating my demos. Did you look ahead? You looked ahead. So now, let's start looking at ways that we can actually really take all the features of PowerShell and stitch these together with our new ATV PowerShell commands. SFT MIME is gone. There is no more SFT MIME. That earns a thumbs up. I only have one stack of these. You can't keep starting applause rounds like that. I'm going to run out. So let's go back to our clients, to our tiny little domain, where I am the world's worst domain administrator. You'll see why in a moment. Oh, I already did that one. So, over here. Now, I'm going to use the sequencer machine for this demo, and I'm going to make a little note about this. Normally, we don't have sequencer machines. We prefer that you keep your sequencer machine nice and isolated from the rest of your network. That's normally our best practice. It still is our best practice, so we're making no change to that. But just for ease of use, I'm going to use that same machine. But for this next demo, envision the sequencer machine as just any other machine on your network. All make sense? Awesome. So we're going to start our PowerShell remoting demo. And how do we get started? Well, just like ATV, you answered a question. I'm going to call that first. You're going to get one next. So we're going to start with our PowerShell remoting. And we're just going to say help. I don't know how to get started. And PowerShell says, well, there's enable and disable. Well, I've actually had enable pushed out as one of my group policy settings that I have actually executing with PowerShell. And if you actually look in the group policy controller, you'll see that there's a little section in there. You can say, here's some PowerShell commands that you want to execute on your machines as they run logon scripts. And you can just give it just a command that said enable remoting. But just to show you what it looks like, I didn't execute that on one of my machines, so I could show you what that, how easy and how quick this is. So I'm going to run enable PS remoting. Wow, that's all messed up. But you can still read. And I am the world's worst domain admin, so I say yes to every firewall prompt. And I've just poked a hole in the firewall for, well, everything. So I've now enabled all domain administrators to have access to execute remote PowerShell commands on this machine. Let's go away from that. Let's go back to our other machine. Let's take a look and see how that works. Oops. So, to execute commands using PowerShell Remote, we use invoke command. You give it a computer name and a script block. Look familiar? It should. It should look like start job, which we've been doing the entire time. Just instead of start job, we're going to use invoke command. So let's just run a normal command that we run all over the place. We're going to run who am I. That's going to go off on our app v client 1. And look, I'm still George, so the world has not ended. So what else can we do? Well, we can actually execute the same command on two computers. So let's add that publishing server that we just did, and let's add that to both of those systems. And look at that. Boom, we're done. We've just added a publishing server to two clients. Right? That's pretty awesome. Well, can we do publishing? Also, does anyone want to participate in a little race? A fun little race? Anyone have a laptop? I know I'm going to win. That's the whole point. All right, you there with your laptop. We're gonna have a little race. I have 7-zip, and I want you to install 7-zip on that computer and that gentleman's computer over there. All right, ready? All right, go. Well, is it on his? I'm already done before you checked. So I've actually had I've had 7-zip now published out the two computers. That's easy. Look at that. That's magical. But let's do something a little bit more intense. How many of you want to type out every computer in your domain manually and separate it by a comma? I don't know about you, but I imagine that most of you run domains that have a little bit more than two computers. Just a few. So how can we get all of those computers into a way that some variable that we can pass into that computer name command? Oh. Stop looking ahead. Who leaked my demo script? So we're going to use some of the built-in features of .NET. We're going to use system.directory-services.directory-entry. We're going to take one of those, and we're going to use new object. New object takes a .NET object and just assigns it to any variable that we make. So far, I've made two variables. One for stir category, which you're going to understand in a few seconds, and a second for our domain. I'm going to make another one to represent our directory searcher object. And now, we're going to set the search root of the searcher object to our domain. All make sense so far? We're just going to look inside our domain. So, I'm going to look for objects of type computer. I don't want user objects, I want computer objects, because I'm going to execute on computers. Unless we can figure out a way to make PowerShell tell people to do things. And I'm just going to find everything. Let's take a look at what we found. Oh, well, we found every computer on our network. That's not what we want at all. That we can't execute these PowerShell commands on the server. That wouldn't work. So what can we do? Well, we can pipe to another PowerShell construct called getMember. And you can take any PowerShell object, any variable, anything, and pipe it to getMember to see all the things that are inside that object in any way you can manipulate it. So here, we see that we can get directory entry, get hash code, but we see right here, this is what we want. We want properties. We want to look at the name. So I'm going to make a new array. And this array is where we're going to hold all the systems that we're going to use in the very end. And arrays in PowerShell are always denoted with an at symbol, an open parenthesis, and a closed parenthesis. Really simple. Really easy. And if you ever get lost, help. You can just say help array and it will tell you that. So here, we're going to run an advanced command. It's pretty long, so I'm going to walk you through each step. So first, we're going to run for each. For each is the cousin of for each object that we've been running this entire time. It's just a for each loop. So what we're saying in plain English is for each result object in our collected results object, which was a big bag of properties and all those computers we saw earlier, we're going to do a couple things. First, we're going to make a new variable called object computer, And we're going to set that to the properties object of our first of our result. Semicolons, in this case, indicate separate lines of separate commands. Next, we're just going to say objectComputer.name. This is going to echo the name back out to the shell so we can just double check that we're doing the right thing. And then next, we're going to run if the computer name matches something that looks like client, we're going to add it to our list using plus equals the computer name. Raise your hand if that does not make sense. Awesome. And look at that. Just what we thought it was going to do. It was going to echo everything out. And let's just take a look at our list to double check that everything worked. Look at that. We have now made an object array that has just our client systems in it. Super easy. And again, these scripts are going to be up online, so you'll be able to look at that, and you'll be able to run these on your own environment, and do all these cool things, and everyone will love you. So now, we're going to run another command. We're going to get rid of all those packages that we just published out to our client systems. And just to prove that we're not pulling any tricks on you, you go back here. Oops. And look at that. Here's 7-zip. And minimize that. Back to our sequencer. Let's execute this remote command. Boom. We're done. That was quick. It can't be that quick, can it? Well, maybe. I don't see 7-zip here. Let's just go check on the other one and make sure we're... Yep, it's gone. It's gone from both our systems. And I think that's actually the end. Okay, that is the end. Excellent. I was going to get scared if there were more commands in there that I didn't put in. So, one more demo. So why are you guys going to use PowerShell, aside from the fact that it's powerful? Well, there's another really great feature of PowerShell, and another brand new feature in PowerShell V2, not in PowerShell V3, in V2. So this has been around since Windows 7. You can actually take PowerShell, and if you guys have existing automation, you can use PowerShell inside that automation. So if you've written C# or VB, or any code that you use inside your environment to do certain things, you can just bring PowerShell into that world. And it's way easier than just bring up a bunch of PowerShell windows. And the really cool part is that everyone else is doing it, which is a great reason to do anything when you're in high school. Even other app B components. And as promised, we're going to show you that the app B components actually echo back. If you guys use the UI on these app B, on our app B client, or I think on our server as well, we'll actually show you every PowerShell command that you do through the UI. We'll show you what the server and the client are actually executing underneath. They're doing the same approach. So, let's go back to our demo. And for this part of the demo, I'm going to bring up the client. I'm trying to make it so y'all can see this. No, come on, let me. Oh. Well, if you could, I'm going to hold it up here so you can see it.
George, set the taskbar.
Oh, set the taskbar to auto hide, but I love taskbars. Go away. Oh, wait, that's lock. Auto hide. Oh, there it is. Okay. So now we can see show PowerShell commands. If I just mouse myself over and look at any of our packages, you can see it looked to get a list of that publishing server, and it echoes back everything it's doing underneath. This is kind of hard to read, so I apologize. So we're just going to move on to the next set of our demos. We're going to host some PowerShell inside some existing code. I'm going to start up some Visual Studio. I love Visual Studio 2012. It's my day-to-day development environment. So let's give that a second. And I have a little project that I've made. It's not that big, so I'll be able to walk you through all the code in here. I promise it's not too scary. See? Not too scary. It's really tiny. This is the equivalent of Hello World in PowerShell. So a couple things to note. This is just a simple console application. And what this is going to do is this is going to pop open a console window and just show me all the packages that are on the system. That's all it's going to do. We're just going to run that same get app client package command that we've been running this whole time. So first, I'm importing a namespace, system.management.automation. Super easy. You can find that on MSDN. Next, I'm going to make an instance of the PowerShell object. Again, very easy, just PowerShell.create. And all of these commands are documented up on MSDN. And I'm going to run a script. I'm going to import the apt-vclient module. And I'm going to get apt-vclient package. And next, I'm going to write out a line saying, here's the packages that are on the system. And for everything that we found in that last result session, we're going to pipe its name and just show its name up here. And if something bad happens, you all can laugh at me as you see the error count. Make sense? Let's give that a shot. And we're just going to step into the debugger here so we can actually see what Visual Studio is doing every step of the way. So I'm going to step over. We invoked our command. It's running in the background. Boom. It's done. So now we can see a result. That's not the result that we want. And we can see it just found 7-zip, which is one package on my system. You can see that right there, along with my Fidelity account, apparently. So we're just going to run through, finish that up. It's going to find the other package on my system. And in case you don't believe me yet, it's there. And you can see it's printed both of these back out to our command window. Really easy, right? Everyone can do it. So that's how you host PowerShell. And if you guys want to be interested in looking at the code, again, this is all going to be up in the slides, so you can take a look at this. And for those of you who are VB fanatics, right there. So just to cover everything that we've done, PowerShell makes it really easy to work with every single component in AppV. We've gone through an entire scenario end-to-end, sequencer, server, and client. We never touched the GUI except just to verify that we did what we thought we did. With Windows 8 and PowerShell 3, there's no reason not to start using PowerShell. It's become incredibly powerful. And when you combine all these really advanced Windows remoting features with AppV 5, you can do some incredibly complex scenarios. And PowerShell 3, by the way, is going to be available as a free download for Windows 7 customers. So no need to worry about that. And last, if you guys ever get lost, help is really easy to find. And you can always pipe to do some really cool stuff. UX makes it simple. PowerShell makes it powerful. There's lots of related content that is over because this is the last session. And if you guys want to fill out the evaluation session, please do so. It's on My Tech Ed. You can always take a look at that. And if you have any comments, please come up and see me afterwards. And now, don't worry, I didn't forget about you guys. We're open to questions. One question? I do not believe we have Softricity anywhere in the registry. I have forgotten what Softricity is. Next question. Yes. So the question was, is there a way to make PowerShell remoting work for any other security group as opposed to just domain admins? The answer is yes. It's just another parameter you specify on top of enable PS remoting. So again, super easy. Next. No, I didn't. That's the default. The default that it works with is, so the question is, what's the default, I think, for enable PS remoting? The default is domain administrators.
Even if they're not admins on the box.
Even if they're not, well, I mean, they're domain administrators, so they're admins on the box. And if they aren't, then they aren't, and it won't give them that. Here you go. Any other questions? Back in the front. You there. You throw config manager. So you can do everything that I've done with config manager 2012 SP1. Configuration Manager actually introduces a new button in Service Pack 1 that lets you actually import and work with direct ATV5.0 packages. Super simple. You can even set up connection groups with it. And I've actually been testing it. It's super easy, and it works just with your existing infrastructure. Next. So, yes, you can. So we actually made a little tiny little investment in there. So ATV files, if you actually look at it, it's actually a zip container, just like .appx files for Windows 8. So Windows 8 apps are .appx files. And for both of those, you can actually just rename it to .zip, and you can look inside. Super easy. Next. How do I do that again? I'm actually going to be posting a lot of these scripts up on the TechNet PowerShell gallery. And you can actually save lots of commands if you want to run like a whole string of them all at once. Oh, how did... So you want to do what I did and you want that demo script? I might be able to post that one up there too. But if you want, PowerShell scripts are just run and you just can type them in the Notepad, or you can use the built-in PowerShell ISE and they come out as PS1 files. Files. Yep. Oh, that was a little, so I wrote a PowerShell script. Okay, that's the question you were looking for. So the question was, how did I actually make it look like I was typing, even though I clearly was not typing? I was actually typing with my toes. There's a keyboard underneath the lectern. No, it was a PowerShell script I wrote, then I just passed in a PowerShell script and it looked and parsed it. I'll get right back to you. So a package failed to load. It shouldn't. So the question is, can a package fail to load because of a file type association problem? It shouldn't. I hope it doesn't. So we followed, at least for file type associations, if you do end up having a block where you have two packages that attempt to do the same thing with the same file type associations, we have last writer wins. So the last writer on top of that will... We'll take the file type association on the box. And here you go. Next question. In front. Or if you guys actually want, you can come up to the microphone that way. It's much easier for me to figure out where you guys are. Yep. You can apply on top of each other. You can also do that. And that's actually really easy to do through the server. So normally we would advise you, if you're going to do it on the client, you publish dynamic configurations on the server. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Question, can you use the same publish command to publish ATV packages in Citrix servers?
So the question is, can I use the same publish command on a Citrix server? So Citrix servers are basically just Windows boxes, right? So if you put the client on it, it'll just work. Here you go. I'm running out of these, so next couple of questions. Anyone else? One more? Yep. So I guess on client systems, we normally would expect that you would do this all through the server. And you'd have server admins that you would delegate as specific administrators on that publishing server. And so we actually have that set up. And the question is, how can you administer, how can you set like individual responsibilities for people in your team to manage ATV packages? And we would normally suggest that you do that through the server. And the server has a specific button that says add administrator. And administrators will have rights to publish packages down to the client. PowerShell and execution permissions for PowerShell are controlled separately. Some assembly may be required. Anyone else? Oh. Version 5? We're just on version 3. PowerShell version 3 is already available as a release candidate. Just by going up to MSDN, you can search for PowerShell version 3, and you will find it super easy. It'll work on Windows 7. As all my boxes were Windows 7. Cool.
One more question. When you have the command line package creation, specify the executable. If you've got full suppression, like a silent install, can you specify those right in the PowerShell?
So the question is, when we're doing a new app sequencer package, can you just make a silent install? And the answer is yes.
Okay.
You can do that. One more.
So the question I have is about sequencing Visual Studio for developers. So I have a development shop with 100 developers, and it's always painful every time there's a new version of Visual Studio to get that whole suite of software out there to them, and them be able to use it and
have it deployed and all the other questions, stuff like that. I'm actually going to defer you up to our resident sequencing experts, which would be Andy or Matthias or someone, one of you. I actually don't know. I don't know the answer, is the long story short.
That's like two Starburst cards, right?
Yeah. That's one of the... Yeah, oh, no, I don't know if that's two Starbucks cards. I'm going to give you one. But hold that question and come back up to the front. You can ask some people who know more things than I do. It's all right. That's what everyone else does. Any more? So I don't turn on the microphone for this.
I'll talk to my TAM then.
Awesome. Anyone else? You guys are all free to go. We can all go get on the bus to go to Universal. Thank you all for coming. Please fill out your surveys. Those are super important. I always like to see what's on there. If you guys have any other feedback, if I talk too fast or too slow, come up and tell me. Thank you.